Hello, everyone. Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and Julie.
I was a yeah girl. I know. I was talking to my son today, and I played the music for him, and he was, "Damn you, mother! Damn you! I can't get it out of my head now.
Exactly.
Damn you!" I love to do sneaky things like that.
I know you do. You're pervasive. I mean, you get in there, you get in your brain, you mess with us, mess with your kids specifically. But isn't it a fun day?
You know, that's what moms are for.
Well, for sure, for sure. And if you don't know right now, we're mother and daughter law attraction coaches, and we're so much more than that. We're authors of The Clutterfly Effect.
And we're even more than that.
Yes, because we're light and love.
That's right.
And also, I'm a girl who has a cold.
You are. And I want to just say,
yeah.
Can I just give you kudos, because you're such a champ. You have one of those miserable, you know, for people who live on the West Coast, you know, where the weather is just like always the same,
right?
Like perfect. You know, when you live in the Midwest and you get one of those summer colds, they're really nasty.
Yes, they are.
And you know, you think that, oh, you know, the winter cold or whatever, but it's that dang summer cold, and you have that. And here's the thing, we were able to trace, to patient zero this week, because we couldn't understand this, how you got this cold. Mm-hmm. And then we kept looking around, snooping, playing Jessica Fletcher, playing Hercule Poirot. We're doing some detective work. And sure enough, we found patient zero.
There you did.
Who gave it to you.
Yeah. And not very happy with that.
No.
But I'm keeping myself very hydrated.
You're doing the right things, and you're also keeping Walgreens afloat. I noticed that their stock has gone up since...
Yes, for sure.
Yeah,
this is the interesting thing about being coaches, because, you know, we're taught when we're in our programs and we're learning about how we manifest our feelings, and you manifest everything in your life. And then when I get hit with these colds, I'm like, I was feeling pretty good. I was really moving and shaking.
Mm-hmm.
Where did my vibration, did I attract this cold?
Mm-hmm.
And I still never get really a true answer, because the truth is, you must say, well, you just did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the truth is, you know, you really, you know, you have your spiritual self, right?
Yes, exactly.
And then you have your emotional self.
Mm-hmm.
You have your, you know, your, I guess, intellectual self. And then you have your body.
Right.
You know, we're still trying to figure it all out.
Right.
You know, some people it just looks like, you know, oh, I just don't manifest cold. I just don't do it.
I never get sick.
No, good for you.
Yeah, I'm proud of you. And I've said it a thousand times to myself.
Yeah.
I am a healthy person. I've got great lungs. I never get
Uh-oh.
Exactly.
Uh-oh.
And so we're going to have a guest on today.
Yes.
Bill King.
Bill King, and we're looking forward to speaking with Bill. He's got a cool website. It's really fun. It's idontstink.com. But he's also part of the authors that we talked about last week, that this Unwavering Strength and Anthology, where, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 authors have all told their stories of unwavering strength. And Bill's got a very, very, it's lighthearted, but we all have been there, and we feel this. He talks about fear, and I think is the title of his short story. Is it Water, Water Everywhere?
Yes,
something like that. Great, yeah. And so we'll discuss that when Bill comes on, and we're also going to discuss his website and what he's about, really. And I guess we can assume that it's about idontstink.com. It's about stinking thinking.
For sure.
We know that.
It's about... I'm so sorry, but there we go. I just coughed it out.
Oh, good.
But, you know, I was just thinking about law of attraction and this cold. And I think, you know, my virus that I got, I think it had a bigger will than my will.
Uh-huh.
Or in this whole creation of co-creating with people and things and everything else like that, that virus, you know, needed me to co-create with it.
And I was, you're so loving and generous to that virus.
Well, that's the one complaint you have of me. You say, sometimes, Julie, you give until it hurts.
I know.
And today I gave to that virus. And
I do want to say, though, I just honor you, and I love you, girlfriend, because you're you just keep plowing through. And I just, you know, I'm proud of you.
I appreciate that.
But I also want you to take good care of yourself too.
I always do. So today we may end the show a little early if I have a big choking jag or can't recover. But usually I just need a little bit of a cough to get through. And
and you know, here's the thing. I'm the mom, and I called this. I said, look, I'm not letting you suffer coughing through this thing. We'll just end early.
Yeah, and the audience is like, yes, thank you. I don't want to hear an hour of you coughing, Julie. No problem.
I said, she had just like one of our, this little, you know, these little light towels, you know?
Yeah.
She was coughing in, too. And I said, Jill, get a great big heavy towel to cough into. Get some muffling.
Like a silencer for a gun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, that silencer is not big enough.
Right.
A little towel.
That's right. And so before we start this program, I want to talk a little bit about the Clutterfly Effect because, you know what, that's our book.
Yes.
It's our book, and it's called The Clutterfly Effect, Tweak Your Way to Total Transformation by Decluttering Your Life. And I just got an email, and it's been out for over a year, and it was Amazon number one bestseller. It still is on the bestseller list in a couple of categories. But I just got an email from a woman who said, I found your book, and I just want to tell you, it changed my life. It really was what I needed to read. And I love that when that kind of synchronicity happens where, you know, it comes into your life when you really need it.
Isn't that
and
nice?
So, you know, if you're looking for a philosophy, I would think, of how to get your life better by a couple of coaches. I'm a psychotherapist.
Mm-hmm.
And by decluttering. And what that means is really on multidimensional levels.
Well, you know, it's interesting. This year is going to be a big birthday for me.
Yes.
I'm not going to say what year it is.
No. But it's going to be a big anniversary year for me, too.
I know. Well, because the truth is, I kind of came in that first year you guys were married.
Yes.
So it's been convenient for me.
It's so convenient. And it kind of is our music as we you know, our intro music. I was a yeah girl.
You said yeah, yeah to dad.
Yes. 40 years ago, I said
40
yeah,
years.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so funny because as I'm approaching my birthday, and it's over 100 days away, I have this pressure of, like, feeling getting rid of everything. I'm clearing massive clutter because I want new to come in. And
you
that's
bet.
The whole thing. And we talk about that in the book. I mean, you get it through, you know, your emotional clutter,
right.
Your mental clutter. You know, then you have your physical clutter, of course, and you have habitual clutter as well. We have habits that don't get to the next level.
Right.
And how do we get through those and change those?
Yeah, and we sometimes feel that clutter where, like, wait a minute, another birthday and I'm still kind of, even if I'm, you know, really happy and enjoying, there was an old quote, I can't think of the name of the coach, but he said, if you're not growing, you know, there's really no standing still.
No.
You're pretty much sort of going backward. Now, you know, we're not that harsh, but,
mm-mm.
You know, there's sometimes if you listen to that sweet, still voice inside you, it's like saying, come on. I'm going to give you a little push here.
Yes.
I think it's time for you to do, you know, look at this.
To grow a little bit.
It may not be comfortable. You know, I've come to afflict you in your comfort and comfort you in your affliction. You know, it's and so that's what the Clutterfly Effect is about. And you can buy it. You actually can go to bbcradio.com and Life with a Girlfriend, and we have a button there. But you can also go to amazon.com and get it there as well. And we hope
and
that you do.
And then you just email us the receipt number at talktous@christymarieandjulie.com, and we will send to you, for free, the audio version. And my voice sounds better.
Oh, it does. And I'm really just proud that we did that. I mean, it was not easy, sitting in my closet,
recording.
Because it that has the best sound proofing.
Yes. Exactly.
And so we're just you've got the girlfriends here, Christine, Marie, and Julie, and you can take the audio with you on the road.
Yes. And so what I want to do too tonight, when we're talking to Bill King and talking about fear, you're going to hear a little bit of the story a little bit, and I've got a story I want to share with everybody afterwards as well about how the mind really can. You know, Mom, you always have the acronym for fear. Right?
Bill is with us.
False experience appearing real.
Yes, exactly. Or false evidence.
False evidence, thank you.
Or false experience appearing real as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to share that story afterwards as well.
Yeah.
Because we'll talk to Bill about this. Bill, are you on the line?
Yes, I am, ladies.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
You know, first off, I want to say Bill King wrote a very wonderful story we can all relate to. And I'll let you tell it, Bill, but about how fear can, an incident in your past can create this, for no lack of a better word, a fear bubble,
mm-hmm.
or a fear ray that just kind of takes off from that shot in your life on this timeline,
mm-hmm.
and affects your life in so many different ways, mostly preventing us from having opportunities that come our way.
Right.
But I also want to say, Bill, before we talk about the story and unwavering strength, you have a lovely website. I know it's designed for kids, young adults, but I also feel it's perfect for adults, and it's called idontstink.com. And I love your website because one of the things you talk about is you talk about, of course, how pervasive, you know, our negative self-talk is. And I was talking to someone, and I realized that our negative self-talk, and I know you talk about bullying as well, and is really a way we bully ourselves, our negative self-talk. And one of the suggestions that you give on your website for kids is to kind of change the vocabulary we're using. We get so used to using a certain vocabulary, and when we say, you know, I'm going to up my vocabulary, it's hard to talk negative when you're doing that, when you're changing the words, or when you're, you know, and so forth. But I just wanted to say, you know, what made you come up with your focus on negative self-talk, especially for children? And then also, too, you have this idea of doing kindness as another way of kind of combating negative self-talk.
Well, I tell you, it's kind of interesting how it came about. I wrote a book that was really for, you know, probably 15 to 25-year-olds, and I was inspired to write it. I wrote it in 3 days, and was really, you know, on point to really make a difference to these kids' lives. And what happened is I started doing workshops, and then the age group started dropping. So there ended up being as many kids, you know, from, you know, say 7 to 12, that were coming to those workshops. So I had to kind of bring it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I was actually at, if you've ever heard of T. Harv Eckert, I was at a training intensive, a train-the-trainer intensive, and I was trying to come up with a state change. And so one of the things that I said was, you know, we had 7 minutes to do a 10-minute presentation to get prepared for it and deliver it. And so one of the state changes I had was I had a thought that, you know, negative thoughts stink. And so the state change was going to be, hey, turn to your neighbor and say, I don't stink. And that is actually where I don't stink came from. And what I found is talking with parents is that this is information that my kids need. So then from that, I actually started building and designing the website to help the younger kids. But, you know, kids wouldn't go to a website, you know, a positive thinking website. But, hey, come take a quiz to see if you stink. They'll do that. And that's kind of where
exactly.
It came from.
It's very colorful. It's very kid-like.
Yeah, it makes you happy.
It really does.
It really does, we love the fact that anytime you can become conscious enough to catch that, right, that negative thought that begins, you know, a circle or it leads, who knows where it leads? It's a big snowball, but you ask of your readers is to let's catch that first negative thought.
Well, one thing that I've learned is that we have up to about 50,000 thoughts a day. We're only aware of about 2,000 of them. But a good portion of that other 48,000 or so really are negative. I mean, that's based upon how we're raised, society. Turn on the news. You know, you get it. You're bombarded everywhere. And so a lot of that stuff goes in. And what I found is that a lot of our of the lives we live in the current are based upon, you know, unconscious things that happened in the past. And so becoming aware of the negative thinking, you can actually change your life almost instantly.
Well, you're exactly right, and that those numbers are pretty profound. And I imagine that of those negative thoughts, you've had them the day before, and the year before, and the year before that. They're not all brand new negative thoughts. So that's it's pretty cumulative, you know.
Absolutely, and what I find today is just talk to kids. They kind of, from my experience, is they can be pretty mean to each other, and it's like it's just the way they do it. And so once you become aware of it, once they become aware of it, they start to, you know, they don't unlearn it, so they start making different choices, and it makes a huge difference very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're totally right about kids not being aware. I was sharing a story with my brother was sharing a story with me where we were talking to our cousin, and this happened, you know, when we were 6 or 7, and she goes, you know, brother was so mean to me. And Greg's like, I don't remember ever being mean to you. I've always thought we were good friends and we were great cousins and all this stuff. And yet in her mind, something had happened that he might have said something to her that made her feel bad.
Yeah.
And kids don't realize that their words are powerful. And sometimes just the awareness at a young age makes you want to change your behavior. Like, I want to be kinder, you know?
That's exactly right.
And when you get to that point of realization, your life changes. And I think that, you know, Bill, you taking on that job with the kids at a young age is so commendable, because kids can learn a lot, even at a young age. It's not out of their reach, for sure.
Well, one thing about that, to expand it a little bit more, and the book that I wrote, is that I had actually hired a publicist I had a book written. Originally, it was actually called I Don't Stink, because I was building it for the website. Right. And, you know, what happened is they asked me to be interviewed as an expert for adolescent suicide. And I'm like, no, I don't. What's that? I've never heard of it. And then within a couple of hours, I got a message that a 9-year-old had committed suicide in Dallas here. And I was like, okay, that just isn't a coincidence. So I started asking questions about what I could do to help, and actually ended up rewriting the book all over from scratch. And then after I wrote that, then I said, how can I make it better? Then I included exercises in each chapter to give them skills and techniques that, you know, that they can use and actually make a difference when they're confronted with being bullied or having negative thoughts, depression, and such. And that's really kind of where it really, every, you know, I redid the website, I redid a lot of things to help with that. While I may not deal with adolescent suicide, the whole point is to get them before they get to that part.
This
is to giving them the core, you know, to change their core beliefs about themselves and others.
Mm-hmm. Right, because a child can really hear something and almost, depending on where they're at, can take it in so deeply, a criticism. Mm-hmm. And
also, too, you know, how do I say this? But there's some pretty unconscious parents out there that think, oh, tough love is the answer. And I, you know, and they end up maybe abusing, you know, the child who has a maybe very sensitive feelings, you know. And I also think, too, like you have, I don't say that this curbs it, but you have a focus on kindness, you know. And as a meditator, I, you know, love to practice this idea of loving kindness, you know, that it's like a flower that keeps opening and opening. But you actually have on your website, is it like you have sort of have a place where people can go and document their random acts of kindness?
Yeah, absolutely. And to give you the background, the first website, idontthink.com, was just a quiz. It was to get a stinking forecast and a stinking prescription and kind of be fun, right? And so many people had asked, I need more. And I said, okay. So then as I thought about the design, what way can you change your negative thoughts the quickest? And that is to do kindness for others. So the core of the website was going to be a kindness meter. And so from that, I designed the kindness meter that you create an account for free, and there's over 208 different kind acts that you can log. If it's not on there, you can email the sweetie, which is a skunk from the website, to go in and get it added. And as they start logging their kind deeds, they get messages from the skunks during that time, and just to tell them they're doing a good job at different intervals. And then also they can issue challenges to others. And so the key is to get them out of their own head. And mm-hmm. if you're helping others, eventually one of the kindness categories is kindness for yourself. But you know, when you're in a negative state, you don't really feel like doing something kind for yourself, because you're too busy bashing yourself. So the idea is start by helping others, and then you'll be able to eventually start doing some kind things for yourself.
Mm. I love that.
I do. Now, fast forward to now, you being Bill King, being part of the Unwavering Strength community and part of the book that's coming out, what made you decide? The focus is not on children. It's really your story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What made you decide to be part of this movement?
Well, I believe that for me personally, my life changed on that boat. That was where I started asking different questions. And I started, you know, there's got to be some meaning to all this. And, you know, what can I do? You know, what is the meaning? And then from that, I started working on self-help on myself for over 10 years before I even thought about helping others. But it kind of came to me that I've been doing all this work on myself. I've get all these kids, because usually it was kids my whole life had come for me for advice and different things. And so, you know, I said, well, I can't give them the information, you know, say, for instance, you know, Power versus Force by Dr. David Hawkins. They probably wouldn't understand that at all. But how can I put it in a way that they could understand it? And that's where the first book came out, and then mm-hmm. the second one in the website, all from that. I believe it started with that boat incident.
Wow.
Well, it's interesting you say Power versus Force, because I have a hard time understanding it. it's a book I read over and over again. I'm like, mm-hmm. I get a deeper learning of it every time I read it.
It's an awesome book. It really is.
It is. You know, and so we didn't really touch on the story, but too much. And I want people to go and buy the book. You can buy the book soon.
Yeah, it's not out yet. It has an opening date, September 30th. Mm-hmm. But we're getting ready. We're going to be interviewing like authors like Bill King and others in preparation for this kind of amazing. You called it a movement. I agree. You know, there's this wonderful stories, people who I think it's brave. I think it's courageous to tell your story. You know, Bill, could you tell us a little bit about your story? We talked a little bit about being on the boat, but mm-hmm. Your story is called Water Everywhere?
That is correct, yes.
Yeah.
And it all started when I was 8 years old. I nearly drowned. And so I remember that vividly. And from that experience, I kind of developed a fear of water. Like, for instance, if I did go water skiing, I wore two mm-hmm. life jackets. I mean, that's kind of the fear that I had, but then and then that fear led to fear of bridges, led to fear of heights, and it just kind of went out of control. If there was a fear, I probably had it. And so my wife, on our 10-year anniversary, decided that we were going to take a cruise, so she found the shortest one that she could find from Fort Lauderdale to the Bahamas. Well, that just so happens to be the Bermuda Triangle of all places.
Oh, no!
But that's where it all started, and we actually went. It was the very first of March, and you know, we took off and got actually caught in a tropical storm. It was the earliest one that had ever been recorded in that region, and it happened on the exact date and the time that we were on that boat. And
wow.
It was quite a ride, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, though, because in your story, you talk about this fear that has, you know, kind of like had a rippling effect for your life, this fear of the water, this incident that occurred when you were a child. And near the end of the story, you know, I don't want to tell, I want people to buy the book, and you can buy it, or at least even, you know, pre-order it
yes.
at unwaveringstrength.com, which is awesome.
Yes.
But, Bill, you talk about, you know, at near the end, when you've just had enough, mm-hmm. you relied on a practice, a spiritual practice to kind of get you through the worst of this kind
yes.
of like this,
yes.
this.
Well, let me just say real yeah. quick, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but this was you said it was like a 6-hour tour, you know,
mm-hmm.
but once you got to the destination, you couldn't get off the boat. You had to turn around and go back. Am I correct about that?
Yes, that's correct. Whenever
yeah.
we got to the Bahamas, they said that you know, the seas were too rough to enter, so we had to go back. And I mean, I'm seriously on that boat thinking, how could I jump off and make it to land? I mean, it's literally what I was thinking. And because now I knew what was going to happen is that we got to go right back in that, but
yeah.
it's going to be night. And so if I had my biggest fear, it would be on the ocean where I couldn't see land.
Yeah.
It would
right.
be on the ocean where it was night and I couldn't see anything. Oh, and by the way, throw in a tropical storm with 70-mile-an-hour winds and 65-foot seas at the same time, right? So that would be about, that would be it. That would pretty much be it.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly right. And Julie is mentioning that, you know, after you, at some point you decided, wait a minute, you relied on this practice of meditation and visualization.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To sort of get you through. That's correct, isn't it?
So what it got is, you know, we were outside the whole time until actually it got so bad that, you know, it wasn't safe to even be outside. You could actually be blown off the boat, you know.
Wow.
So we were at the very top deck, which was the sixth floor, and that's where we had been the first 6 to 8 hours. And then because it got so rough, they made us go in. And as it got darker and as it got worse, I mean, we're on the sixth deck, and looking out the windows to the left and right, the sky was gone. It was water on each side.
Oh.
And people were screaming and crying, and it was just like it was overload. And
yeah.
so what
now
I had remembered...
You mentioned that somebody died on that cruise because
yes,
of
there, here. Yes. One person had died. That we knew of, there was about a dozen ambulances or so that when we got back, they had to get them off. So we were 2 hours before we could even get off the boat when we got mm-hmm. back. But I think that at that, there was a point that it was just, you know, it's going over, we're going down. You know, there really wasn't even doubt in my mind that it was going down. And in fact, they had these Spanish-speaking crew members that were drop things. I don't know what they were, some sort of measuring tape or something, but they would look at each other and scream at each other, and I knew that wasn't good. And so but at that point it was just like, you know, this is it. This is how it's going to end. And
mm-hmm.
so I figured that I could start praying. And so then what would happen is I would start praying and, you know, just conventional, just trying to clear my mind, but then what happened is the boat would lean over, and it would lean over more, and it would lean over more. You'd hear things breaking, crashing, and you think it's fixing to go, and I'd get so scared I couldn't even pray. And so then I remembered that in growing up in parochial school was to, you know, having these memorized prayers that I had.
Right.
And seriously, I would just start saying the prayers, and then, you know, within a very short time, actually, because I had them memorized, I didn't have to think to say them.
Right.
And
right.
so then I just kept doing it. And when I woke from someone screaming they saw lights, it had probably been about 3 to 4 hours of saying it nonstop with no breaths in between, no
mm-hmm.
breaks. So I don't know how many I said, but I just didn't hear anything at
mm-hmm.
all. because I was just focused on the prayers.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've had, you know, I was 12 years of parochial school, so I know. Was it? What, let me just guess. Was it the Hail Mary? Was it the Our Father?
Yeah, it was actually Hail Mary and if you know the Angel of God.
Oh yeah,
those were the two.
You were calling the angels to you.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think, you know, Our Father, I started it, but some of the things it kind of messed with my mind. So Hail Mary and Angel of God was always my go-to prayers.
Yeah.
So.
Uh-huh. And then three before you knew it, 3 hours had passed or so, just because you were in that zone.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's crazy about it is that if we would have literally left 2 hours earlier, we would have missed it. If we would have went the next day, they said, everybody come back the next day. It was clear sky, calm waters.
Wow.
The next day. So the chance of me being on that boat with trying to overcome my fear and being faced with the worst possible fear I could possibly have, that's when I started asking questions. I have to be honest. I didn't get off the boat and say, oh, what lesson did I have to learn?
Right.
I
no.
was mad. I was
no.
angry. I was so mad I wouldn't even call the place to try to get a refund. That's how mad I was. And but, you know, over the course of about a year, it took me about 9 to 12 months before I was able to even talk about it in our house. Nobody asked anything to me about it. Couldn't even use the word boat. If there was a movie on that had a boat, I refused to watch it. And of course, right after that, the I guess it was that Perfect Storm came out.
Yeah,
and,
no.
That freaked me out just looking at the previews. I had to close my eyes.
Sure.
So, but it was, and to be honest, I this is only the second time I've actually talked about the boat since it happened to other than anybody other than my family.
Right.
And so it's kind of it's almost healing in and of itself.
Yeah, you bet. And I mean, you got enough space around it that you could begin to see, how. You don't want to say what the lesson was, but you know, what was the transformative moment? Because you say in your story that you started seeing things differently.
Mm-hmm.
You started being more bolder, braver.
Well, what I realized when, and I didn't ever ask the question at that time, what lesson did I have? It's like I think the question that I asked over and over again, you know, what's the meaning of this? And so and that actually did not happen until about 9 months later. I was in New Orleans for a high school football championship with some friends, and we were on a casino boat that they had docked there, and we had that was my second time ever on a boat since that the first time since the boat. And we're on the top deck and we hear blowing, we have a horn blowing, and then we hear the thing saying, everybody, you know, get off the boat, and everybody continued gambling, and then they screamed it, and then everybody started to panic, and that was the time when the boat, a barge, lost power, and it ran into the Riverwalk down there, and it stopped within literally 3 feet of the boat I was on. That is when I started asking the question.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding. It was the craziest thing I've ever experienced.
Yeah. That Riverwalk, Julie, is that in Texas?
No, that's in New Orleans. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm from Louisiana.
There is one in
so.
Texas, too, but there's, I mean, I'm sure there's other places. But, yeah. The one in Austin's not, there's no boats going on. I mean, No. I want to ask a question to you, Bill, about, the month before the cruise. Did you have thoughts like, I'm going to have to address this fear? Or, I mean, I know your wife got this as an anniversary present for you. I mean, was this totally a surprise out of the blue? Did you tell that the universe or God or was saying, hey, some things are coming up for you, and I want you to take care of this?
So it was kind of interesting. I'll be honest with you. I was trying to figure out a way to get out of it.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever even told her that. So, you know, I mean, and to be honest, I had a fear of flying, too, so we had to fly there. And we got caught in one of the worst storms in Atlanta there had been. So we had to circle around the airport. We were 70 miles out. We had to circle for an hour and a half before we could land, having turbulence. And, I mean, that's another whole story in and of itself. And so by the time we got to to Fort Lauderdale, it was like it was relief to be back on land. And then, you know, I really was, I didn't sleep at all that night. It was, you know, we woke up, it was raining. I mean, every sign that you could possibly think of was telling me to get off the boat. And you know, but you know, I have to tell you, my wife is just such an amazing person, and she was the rock that kept me alive. I think I'm not kidding. She was terrified.
As you're writing the story, I mean, I got a sense of that you know, that there is this strength there in her, you know, and that you know. That it was lovely, but is she a Pisces?
So no, she's a Libra, but I think that if she would have shown even a moment of cracking, I would have probably, you know, probably would have died of a heart attack. And
yeah,
I'm not kidding.
It.
I mean, I literally was in panic mode, and she was always, "Honey, it's going to be all right." You know, a wave just splashed over the boat, and we're on the sixth floor. It's going to be okay. It's all right. No, there's water coming over the boat. but she was always there to support me and keep it calm. And I know she was scared to death too. But
yeah.
I mean, I was just like beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. But then I also realized after the next boat really was that if I could cover this, there's nothing I couldn't do,
right.
And so, and then I started doing self-help and started really understanding fears, and then I realized that, you know, I made all that up. You know what? We left land, we came back to land, we were alive. All that in between was torture for myself.
Right.
I completely tortured myself, and I had been doing that for 30 years. I'd been torturing myself.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, I got over my fear of heights. You know, I mean, I couldn't even get on a ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, after working on it, I'm able to climb up to the top of our, the inside of our house, hanging Christmas lights and stuff that is on just a little bitty ledge that's 20 feet in the air. And that's stuff I wouldn't even thought of before.
Right.
And so it's all that fear that you think of that's just not really real. Now fear, there's a purpose for fear. It keeps you alive sometimes.
Sure.
But you also need to distinguish between, you know, the productive fear and the fear that's really keeping you from really realizing your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, and I like the way you put it, too, because you realize that a fear can expand into other areas of your life. I mean, we talk about how you can have success in one area, and that success can expand into other areas of your life. And sometimes, in the other direction, it happens as well. You have a fear response to something, and then you keep working it, and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, I've got fear in other places now that I did not necessarily have. And it takes a breakthrough like you have had to make that jump, that leap forward. And, you know, I'm really impressed with you. I'm impressed with your story. And I'm proud that you were someone, you know.
Bill, do you have a few moments to hang on? Because
sure.
I want Julie to tell a story. She has I wouldn't call it a bridge story. Do you have a few minutes to stay on with us?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, great.
Well, you know, in regards to fear, I live in Illinois, and I had a business that I had to cross over the Mississippi like once or twice a week.
Mm.
And it was fine. This was never a problem. Bridges were never a problem for me. But I, all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, and I say that now, out of the clear blue, but the truth is I was letting a lot of negative thoughts build in my body, in my mind. And I was starting to have panic attacks trying to cross this bridge into Iowa. It happened just one time out of the blue. I actually had to pull over. There's an exit before you get over.
Mm-hmm.
So you could literally pull off before you cross into Iowa. And I called my mom and said, I'm having an anxiety attack, and I'm not used to having these, but my heart is racing. My breathing is...
And these are not just like a little bridge. These are like tall, you know, major...
Oh, right.
Bridges.
I know them well, unfortunately.
Yeah. and this was occurring for, you know, over a month, where I was, this new fear had come in, and it was going through the rest of my life as well.
Yes.
I would have anxiety attacks and fear in other situations, social situations. And I go, okay, now that we know, I even had an anxiety attack that, I went to the hospital for, because I would have put money on it that I was having a heart attack. But
yeah.
I just got a pamphlet saying anxiety attacks, this is what you do. Mm-hmm.
And this was not Julie. This is
not
normally
me.
Her.
No.
Right.
And it was so interesting. So I ended up, going, okay, this is an anxiety attack. I've been checked out. This is just my mind playing tricks on me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on. And what can I do to get myself across this bridge easier? Mm-hmm. And I was reading Marcy Shymoff's book way before this, mm-hmm. Happy for No Reason. And, I know that the studies are, if you smile, just by smiling alone, your brain chemistry changes. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to start smiling, forcing myself to smile across this bridge. And I know when you express gratitude, mm-hmm. you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to start, during this time while I'm smiling, I'm going to sing this one song by Natalie Merchant, the thank you song. I'm going to thank mm-hmm. you, thank you. And she's literally saying mm-hmm. thank you over and over again. And then I go, okay, and I'm going to, and then I did that, and I'm like, okay, I'm not there yet. I'm still kind of nervous. And the next thing I would do for a distraction, I would just take change, like quarters and dimes and nickels, change,
mm-hmm.
and I would just throw them, into my car,
big cup.
And into a big cup, try and just shoot it while I'm traveling over the bridge. And within a week, I was cured. I had turned my brain around, and now I tell the story, and I realize, I use the word change in here. And when I went to the hospital for the anxiety attack, I had just gotten done watching the movie Transformers, So I'm like, okay, what's going on with change in my life?
Transformation.
And
the bridge.
Exactly. What am I resisting, nothing. Sometimes change is just...
It's change.
It's change.
Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes, when we look at our lives in different perspectives, like we have our spirit, our soul, and our body, sometimes our spirit and our soul have already changed.
Yes.
And then our bodies need to catch up.
Yes.
And it holds right. on sometimes for dear life, like, I don't think so,
Yes.
And then you got to break through. But I totally get that, how fear can come in.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people experience that, and I just hope that I know that your story will spark a light in people and say, okay, I don't have to live with this fear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to live with this fear.
Another thing that I realized, and it's a whole other story for another time, but so I do have a bridge story. Now, I worked in Louisiana, and I had to cross over multiple Mississippi
right.
River bridges that some of them are pretty terrifying. And I would be terrified, panic attack over every time. So I know what you're experiencing. But after I started working on self-help, I thought, hey, I can conquer this. I can do this. And so I was down in New Orleans, and I said, hey, what better way to conquer your fear of bridges than driving over the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway, which just happens to be the longest bridge in the world. And literally, it's surprising that I didn't cause a major accident, is all I can say.
No. Oh, no.
I had a song. I was singing, too. That song that was on the radio at that time, or I was singing, it was Ain't No Stopping Me Now. So I was singing that, and then I remember, like it was yesterday, I was singing it, and then I looked in the rearview mirror, and there was no land. And at that moment, everything changed. I had never calculated that I wouldn't be able to see land.
Right.
And from that point forward, it was just one event after another. It is. You can't just go in it just thinking you can. You need to practice things and then, kind of work on it and work on yourself before you attack something. Very, very. That's very.
Yeah, especially
serious.
the longest bridge ever.
It took me. It was 30 miles. It took me an hour and a half to get across it.
And were people honking at you going, get going?
No. It got worse because there was fog rolled in. And it was the fog that you can't see 10 feet in front of you. So I remember when I got off the bridge, I had held the steering wheel at the 10-2 position so tight that I went to release, and my hands were literally stuck. I had to one finger at a time. I had to pry off of to get that. That's how bad it was. And when I went in and talked to the person at the convenience store to get a Coke, because I was literally flustered, I said, man, that's some fog on the bridge. He said, yeah, some idiot just the other day was driving so slow, caused a 77 car pileup. That was like 2 days ago. I was driving like 5 miles. I was that idiot. Thank God someone didn't run into me from behind.
Oh, sure.
Well, you know, your change comes pretty by fire.
Exactly.
You know, just don't go, it's a bright sunny day and I'm going to tackle this bridge. Now it's like the worst day ever.
Yeah, I mean, now I get it, you know, water everywhere. I mean, it's not just the, you know, it's not just the cruise ship. It really is about that. And wow. You know,
exactly. Well, Bill, before we let you go, I just want to say thank you for your openness, your honesty today. You can sign up for the book at unwaveringstrength.com.
Yes.
And you can also go to Bill's website, idontstink.com. And really...
And he doesn't, Julie.
No, he does not stink.
Isn't that great?
You know. He has a deodorant of positive thinking all over him.
That's right. It's, what is it? Irish Spring Don't Stink.
Yeah. Or that cologne of positive thinking.
Yeah. Ode to fear no more.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Bill, and have a wonderful night.
Thank you, Bill, and I hope everyone goes to unwaveringstrength.com to pre-order. It comes out September 30th, but it's going to be an awesome book, and I really would like to have everyone go and check out idontstink.com, and you know what? Let's all take that loving kindness challenge. And what are some of the things, real quickly, that people can do to do acts of kindness?
Well, it's very simple. That, you know, there's on the website, it's got, I mean, on they create an account, they get their own personal kindness meter, their kind deeds feed the big kindness meter that's on the main page. And, you know, it can be as little as just smiling at someone, waving to someone, opening a door for someone, letting someone go in front of you. It doesn't have to be financial. It can be just, you know, call someone you love and say thank you. One of the things I have at the top up there is that when someone that you love calls you, when you answer it, you know, greet them with a compliment. I've done that. I do that to my wife all the time. She's probably sick of it, but I do it like to my sister one day, and she was going, "Wow, that just made my day." So just being just kindness. It's just very simple and easy to do.
I remember reading Deepak Chopra's book, and he just said one of the things that it's very simple is just when you're passing someone or whatever, just send them a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
How simple is that? You know, like I just bless you. I wish you well. You know, and who knows? You know, just that small act is makes you feel better. That's for sure.
That's for sure. That's
every little thing makes a big difference.
It really does.
Yeah. Well, you've been a blessing to us, Bill. We really appreciate having you on our show, and we wish you all the best.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
You ladies are awesome.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Bill.
Oh, I loved Bill. I love him. He's got a great energy.
Doesn't he?
Yes, and... You know what I love about Unwavering Strength? I mean, there's a wide variety of stories in here from, you know, pretty, you know, dealing with fear in your life to dealing with grief in your life.
Yes.
We've experienced grief. You know, that's the one thing we don't talk about enough, and we all go through it. We all go through grief. Most of us lose loved ones unless we depart early ourselves. Most of us... you know, lose dreams or, you know, things happen, losses occur.
Yes.
And we, you know, there's that timing. I mean, even Bill talked about it in his own story about after the boat.
Right.
He just didn't immediately go and have this epiphany, like, everything is cool, you know? No. Time had to pass first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's typically what we have to let ourselves be. We have to go through the grieving process.
I totally agree with you there about this time thing. It's, you know, it's an expression that we use so much is, you know, just start moving forward. Move forward.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a certain, I want to call it like a gravitas, a landing of something. Something has to land, and it has to land deep enough that it stirs you. There is some transformation, even if it doesn't look on the outside that there was. But, you know, you can tell that something has changed in you, you know. Well, maybe you might just feel a little less hubris. Maybe you feel a little more humility, you know, whereas before you were like, you know, that's no problem. I can do that, you know. And all of a sudden, no, wait a minute, I feel a little more vulnerable, you know.
Well, it's so interesting you said that because when I've dealt with my own personal grief in certain situations about loss or what, the first one that always comes to me is my compassion grows deeper for other people.
It really does, doesn't it?
It grows for me, and it grows for my capacity to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through our pain that we are able to do this.
Yes.
And like
that we connect. You know, like with Bill, you know, we told his story, then you told yours, and he went, well, I got a bridge story. I mean, you know, that's...
And we bridged together.
Yes.
Yay!
Yes. You know, we were bridging the gap.
Yes.
For that, you know, like you said, pain, you know, grief, these transformative moments.
Yes.
But it has to land at a certain level. You just can't like, hey, just move forward from this.
Right.
Move on.
Because a lot of times that just means you're just stuffing it down someplace.
I sometimes believe that because it seems to me that if you do that, it comes back or it comes around.
Yes.
You know, and if you haven't taken care of it, you know, the knock on the door becomes a knock on the head, you know, it becomes a, you know, knocking you off your feet. You know, there's just that certain bit of, like I call it, gravitas that needs to
right.
be, that needs to land first.
And then like with Bill, it becomes, a, you know, 20-foot waves and 30-foot waves and
60-foot
waves. Yeah, 60-foot
waves.
And, you know, so the universe has a way, or God has a way of showing you to, hey, you're not there yet. You're not
mm-hmm.
done.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to own this.
Right.
And that's what typically happens. So you want to own your upward
you
movement.
You want to own your life. You
yeah,
want to go,
you
know, at the end, you know, of course we'd all go, oh, I'd love to have been, you know, multimillionaire and the darling of the jet set. You know, everybody would like to have, you know, but at the end of the day, you're like, wait a minute. I gave Julie this little necklace for Christmas that I had engraved on it. And it represented to me who I think she is. And I put on it grit, you know. And that is that element that, you know, you don't get by being pampered.
No.
You don't get that by having everything go right and smooth and, you know, all that. And sometimes you want that, you know?
For sure.
Yeah.
You do. You do. Well, girlfriend, it has been a wonderful show today.
Mm-hmm.
You have a quick review. Do you want to review before we leave? You saw a movie, and sometimes I like to throw in a Life of the Girlfriends review.
I could. I don't know, though, if it's really a change of topic, though.
Then let's say no.
Okay.
We'll save it for next week.
That sounds good.
We'll save it for next week.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank everyone for listening to this wonderful show tonight on Unwavering.
Oh, really? Was it a while?
What?
I'm sorry. You said, I want to thank everyone for listening to this wonderful show. And I'm like, yeah, you go, girl.
It was a wonderful. I know. It was wonderful for me.
It was great.
You can find us at theclutterflyeffect.com, ChristineMarieAndJulie.com, bbsradio.com/lifeofthegirlfriends. Everywhere. You can also email us at talktous@ChristineMarieAndJulie.com.
Yeah, we'd love hearing from you guys.
And the Clutterfly Effect. Purchase the book, The Clutterfly Effect, at Amazon as well.
And then how do they get the free audio?
Just email us the receipt and we'll send it to you.
Yes.
In digital format.
Right.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you very much. Anything you want to say, girlfriend, before I leave?
No, I just want to say that, you know, on the passing of Robin Williams, I just think that I want to just say what a lot of joy and pleasure. And if you were, you know, as old as I am, you can remember when he came on the scene as Mork. And just this, I don't know, to me it was always like this, gentleness. You could see the gentleness in the soul and the spirit. So just want to acknowledge all the good in this kind of sad time.
Yes. All right. Thank you, Mama. Love ya.
Hey, love you too.
Love everybody out there.
Thank you,
guys. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye. It was great. It was great.